MX Network production.
It's the Renthal Reaction Show for breaking moto news, hot topics, and moto by the minute.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Renthal Reaction Podcast. Thank you for listening. Adam Ciancarillo announces that he will be done racing at the end of the Supercross season this coming year. So he's got four more rounds to go. And, so lots to get into when it comes to talking about Adam's decision here on the Renthal Reaction Podcast. Renthal.com, they have a Works Fit tool on the website. They have a dealer locator as well, dealer inventory, all of that going on at Renthal.com, Factory Honda, Red Bull KTM, of course, Monster Energy Kawasaki. Been using Renthal forever. Sprockets, bars, chains, grips, mountain bike products as well. You look at Adam Ciancarillo, he's used Renthal bars pretty much his entire career, probably. So lots to get into when it comes to talking about AC's big announcement. With me on the line to talk about it from Renthal, it's Paul Parabinos. Hi, Paul.
What's up, Steve? How's it going?
Good. Thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. Lots to get into when it comes to AC. And also on the line, a gentleman that knows Adam well, has watched him forever, from Team Green, Ryan Holiday. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
So would it be fair to say, Holiday, that you've seen Adam since he was on, like, 60s?
Honestly, before that, because okay. I would go back to before I joined Kawasaki when I worked at the AMA, and Adam was a 50cc rider at that time. So, yeah, I not day one, but pretty dang close.
Yeah, he was on Cobras, right, back then?
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez, yeah, long time. Look, man, he hasn't been the same guy. You know, he's got nerve problems going on. He thinks it's due to the multiple shoulder surgeries that he's had over the years. And, you know, the guy that came out in the 450 class and won Monster Cup. And then I think, Paul, was it 8 straight practices he was the fastest guy? 7 or 8 straight practices to start the year?
I don't remember, but yeah, probably.
Yeah. He hasn't been the same guy, and he's chosen to hang it up at the end of Supercross. And first of all, Adam, the person, I think we're all fans of him. He's a real guy. You know, I've known him, had some deep conversations with him over the years about his injuries and everything and getting back and all of that. But just, I mean, and he's going to stay in the sport. You two are involved in the industry, and riders like him find good places to go because of how he is as a person. But yeah, I got all the time in the world, Paul, for Adam as a human being and as a guy.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm Florida born and raised, right? So I remember seeing Adam at the local tracks when he was on a Cobra as well, like before Ryan scooped him up at Kawasaki, which I want to say was around 2005. And I think one of the most, maybe one of the most unique things about his career is that he's stayed with a brand his entire life. Like, I don't know of any other rider that's really ridden one brand for literally his entire life for the most part. I've always ran into him at the tracks growing up when I was riding a lot. Always had been a really good fan of Pro Circuit when he turned professional and joined PC. So yeah, I've been watching obviously Adam for his whole career, and it's a shame that he's wanting to hang it up, and it's a shame that kind of injuries is the reason for it. You know, obviously he's still got a lot of time left in the tank, but hey, injuries, you know, they took kind of Grant Langston kind of out of the game early. And I think this, it's unfortunate that this happening with Adam as well, but I'm happy to see that he's going out on his own terms as well.
Ryan, what about Adam as a person and dealing with him and his personality and all of that?
Yeah. You know, that's my biggest takeaway with Adam. Obviously he had an incredible career, massively successful as an amateur, was able to win a championship as a professional. And, you know, you talk about the injuries and all that, but at the end of the day, him as a person is my favorite thing about Adam. And it's funny, you know, knowing this is happening and, you know, some projects that are in the works and it'll be coming out in the coming weeks, and going back and seeing videos and interviews and things back to when he was a little kid, when I began working with him, to me, he's the same person. Mm-hmm. And I think that's awesome. You know, the way he communicates to people, the way he treats people, he hasn't changed. And I think that is such an awesome attribute for someone in general, regardless of being a superstar athlete in our world. He is so genuine and such a good person, and he was raised right, and his parents did a fantastic job. And I guess I got to live that. I got to see it and the things that they did and the way that they, you know, groomed him to be a good person. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that I spoke of on a project that we worked on, was that, that's my biggest takeaway with him, is that he's just a good person, a great person.
Yeah. He's such a fan of the sport, right? Like, he got into it from McGrath as a kid, and then like, he just lived it and he just loves it. That's why he's going to, whatever he does next, it'll be in the industry, like I said, because bottom line, Ryan, is he was such a fan of the sport, man. He loved it. I think he really appreciated that he was a factory Kawasaki rider. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And honestly, and again, I go back to dealing with him as a kid. You know, I started at Kawasaki in October of 2008. I think Adam was 10 years old at the time, 10 mm-hmm. or 11 years old. And I feel like I developed a good relationship with him, and such a unique relationship with him, because he was such a fan, is such a fan of the sport, and he truly does love it. Mm-hmm. You could sit and have conversations with this 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old kid about everything that had to do with the sport, the races that happened on the weekend, the business side of it, who's going to get rides, what do you think about this? Like, just, you could have any level of conversation about the sport with him at any age. And that's such a unique opportunity, really, especially when you're dealing with a young kid. And again, to this day, he's that same guy. You can have those same conversations.
Check out Renthal, by the way, renthal.com, the Works Fit handlebar comparison tools on the website as well. Paul, you know, he we'll get into his legacy here in a little bit, but this year, you know, he's getting lapped. He's 10th place guy, 12th place guy. You know, certainly there's many riders who could ride this thing out and continue to get some results and, you know, be popular in the pits, and Adam's chosen to just not do that. Are you surprised, Paul, that he's doing this? Or, you know, I mean, he told me, you know, a couple months ago, he's like, I ain't riding for no B team, no offense to those guys, I'm just not doing that. But he certainly could have, and he could have maybe stayed, you know, as a factory guy somewhere else with these results. It's not that bad. But so, Paul, where are you at with, you know, his decision?
I mean, I kind of feel the same way Adam feels about the situation based on what you just told me. And I think the biggest reason I was shocked was just because his age, right? He's young still. But yeah, I think that's a telltale of how much these injuries bother him and bother that they are hampering his ability to be who he is, because this is a kid that's been winning his entire life. Right. And I know he has the potential. We all see that. You just mentioned how quick he's been on a 450, and he had quick success on a 450 as well, but injuries are an awful thing. And I mean, it's taken the sport away from a lot of guys. So I think, I'm not surprised by his choice, because I think it would be a difficult situation. And oftentimes those B teams are dangerous situations, if you ask me. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you miss days of practice, or you have engine failures, things like that. I don't think Adam wants to deal with any of that, like, on top of the injuries that he's already had. So, you know, he's been well taken care of for a long time, and I think it would be difficult to change teams, and I don't know that that would change his result to something that he would be happy with, right? So yeah, I think this is the right decision for him. Absolutely.
What about you, Ryan? Surprised he didn't try to hang on for a couple of years or something?
No, not at all. I mean, again, to Paul's point and what you said, Steve, it's the commitment and the desire to win with him has always been so strong. And I think one of the things that people maybe don't understand about him is his level of self-belief is so high that, you know, he's exhausted every avenue to try to get better mm-hmm. and improve his health. And without that, you know, it's obviously limiting him and what he's capable of doing. And if you take that away from someone that has such a high level of belief, obviously it's a very frustrating situation. So, you know, he's just not able to do what he knows he's truly capable of anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, knowing, you know, we all know how smart Adam is and what a good head he has on his shoulders. You know, it's the right move to walk away, just knowing if I can't go do this to the best of my ability, then there's no fun in it. And
yeah.
Someone that truly loves and enjoys the sport and racing, you know, he's been suffering for years. How much more can you suffer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's had like eight surgeries and stem cell stuff. I mean, he, like you said, Ryan, he has done everything he could to try to help this nerve problem that, you know, basically tingles his arms and goes to sleep and doesn't feel the handlebar really well. It's not a Renthal problem. So, you know, yeah, like I do feel like he's exhausted everything on this.
Yeah, and I mean, I commend him for being true to himself and his reality and kind of accepting what I know undoubtedly was an incredibly difficult decision to walk away from the racing aspect of the sport that you grew up and you love. But I think, yeah, that's a telltale as to how frustrating it is. And what Ryan said is all, I agree with all of it because, yeah, going to another team isn't going to help that. And I think he's done, like Ryan said, he's done everything he can do. So mm-hmm. if he's not going to be the person that he knows he can be on a different team or a different situation, there's nothing left to do, then I think it's very admirable to draw the line and say, okay, now it's time to pivot. Because, you know, I think Ryan and I have talked about this before. So many times, too many guys in our sport carry it on too long. Mm-hmm. And you need to pivot and do something different. And that's when it can lead to major injury or just not, you know, I hated watching Chad Reed ride around in LCQs. I hated it. So I think it's very, mature and yeah, just a obviously a very difficult situation, but for him to do it in this manner, like I have respect for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was telling me a while ago about this and I was throwing out the B team and he's like, no. And then he's like, he said, you know, the only thing that's really going to cure this is rest. And I'm like, well, just take all the outdoors out and then like off and then come back. And he's just like, nah, like, I was like trying to talk him into keeping riding, but his mind was pretty made up. I did think he was going to go to the end of outdoors, but, yeah, a few weeks back found out it was Supercross and then that was it for him. It is interesting. Like, and Ryan and Paul, you were there at the beginning, involved with Kawasaki. I think Paul, you were on the team then, right? When he turned pro?
Team?
When he turned pro?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
So, like, his much-anticipated pro debut got delayed from food poisoning. And then, you know, he went to Geneva and did the shoulders, and did the shoulders in Supercross. And, like, you think of the things that stopped him and the surgeries he's had and the injuries he's had, and there's a lot. But then somewhere in between there, he won 250 Supercrosses. He won 250 Motocrosses. He won 450 Motocross. And, of course, he won the national title and was, you know, 10 minutes away from winning a Supercross title. All of the injuries that Ryan and Paul, you guys talked about, are there and they're true. But in between, there's some real good accomplishments, Ryan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, did he meet expectation? That could be up for debate. You know, a kid that had that much success as an amateur and the level he was competing at and the anticipation of when he turned pro, you know, all of those things that came along with it, mm-hmm. obviously himself, everybody around him, you know, would have had massive, massive expectations, you know, 450 Supercross championships and motocross mm-hmm. championships, you know, at the 450 level, those wins and titles. And, you know, unfortunately at that transition point is when things really started to become a problem for him, you know, the injury side of it stacking up and him having these problems. But, you know, the 250 path wasn't paved with gold either.
Mm-mm,
and
no.
he had to overcome a lot to get to the point of those wins and championships. So, mm-hmm. you know, really from, I mean, Paul, you were there, I was there for Hangtown 2013, and we all showed up mm-hmm. for the debut that never happened, or I guess, you know, delayed. It did happen. It just didn't happen there. You know, I remember showing up there on Friday. I think it was Adam and Friday for press day or something.
Press
and it was like, where's Adam? I'm like, he's in the hospital. I'm like, what do you mean he's in the hospital? Like, he's sick. Like, oh, that's weird. Like, you just think he's sick. But then it turned into this salmonella thing. And, like, there was fear. Like, Adam, maybe ask Adam the story sometime. But, like, there was fears of much worse sicknesses, potentially. at the time that never came to fruition. But either way, like, you know, literally from day one, it was a struggle for him.
Yeah.
Just overcoming situations. And again, I think that goes back to his character and his fight to overcome all of that. And, you know, pretty stubborn kid, I would say. But I think every successful dirt bike racer is stubborn.
And then Paul, he comes back from that. And I mean, he's healthy apparently, and he's just getting worked. He's getting like 13ths, 15ths, right? Like, and all of us are like, really? Is this kid, like, especially me, like, I'm like, this kid is the next one? Like, what? What are you talking about? He's 13th, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember bits and pieces of like, the months leading up to his debut, because it was, I remember it being a hot topic within the shop, as to when it was time to go, because he was still very small at that time. Like a really small kid. So to me, I think his true debut was that following year in Supercross when he won, I want to say, definitely won his first race. I remember that race vividly, but I want to say he won four of the first five before he had that shoulder injury. So he was still a really small kid during that outdoor debut. And honestly, I don't really count that. I think it was early. I think we saw the real Adam later on the next year, but you know, he was attempting to take a giant jump at that time. Mm-hmm. If you remember, he was on super minis the year before in August. And then here we are in May, the following year, and you're at Hangtown. That's a giant, giant jump. So, I think as Ryan alluded to, it was his introduction to the pro class was tough, and not necessarily so much on the track, just because all he had to deal with off the track. But I think he showed his true potential very much the following year, very shortly after that.
Yeah, it wasn't, again, it went to Ryan's stubbornness, where he was like, he's not going to be denied. And soon enough, he was, you know, the hottest kid in the sport, you know. So.
Well, yeah, without getting too much into the weeds about the story of how the, you know, him turning pro that summer came about, you know, like Paul said, it was a big topic of conversation and obviously much debated among a lot of people. And there was many people sitting around the table, you know, deciding what was the right thing to do. And his dad obviously being included in that. And I'll never forget his dad saying in this meeting, he goes, if you allow him to race outdoors this summer, he will win Supercross next year.
Really?
Yep. Those were his exact words.
Yeah, yeah.
And someone from Kawasaki in that room also said, they go, well, you need to understand too, that when he turns pro and comes into Supercross, we expect him to win also. So it was a risk, yeah. Obviously, yeah. To have him turn pro that summer, but I always say, true to the word, he came out and won that first race.
Yeah, no, absolutely, right? Didn't he win two of the first three? Then he hurt his shoulder, I thought?
Three of five,
yeah. I mean, yeah. Right? The kid was on his way. But, and you know, with the news that he's hanging it up, there will be people on the internet and people in my comments section and calling him a bust. And like Alessi, and I say this about Mike too, like, no. Mike never won like Adam did. Adam won a national championship, 24 motos. And he won everything but a 450 Supercross. And he made millions of dollars. And, you know, he's going to continue on to be a successful whatever he's going to do next. And that's as far as you can get from a bust. Like, I don't want to hear it from the people, Paul. I just don't want to hear it.
Yeah, well, I don't hear it from any of those people. I don't read the comments. There's so many retards on the internet that, yeah, who cares what they say? I think it matters the people that – the opinions that matter are the people in the sport that have, some experience with the sport and know what they're talking about. But, yeah, he is far from it. I mean, he's bought houses. He's made a career of himself. He's established himself in the sport. He speaks so well, and he's such a student of the sport, as you know. And as you've mentioned, he's going to find a way to – have another life within this sport and still be happy doing something that he's passionate about. And I think that's what we all want in life, right? I know that's what you've kind of done, Steve, with your, you know, with your business and Pulp and Max. You've turned something, you know, a business into something that just straight out of passion. So I don't think Adam will have any struggles post racing either at all.
Look, you wouldn't.
I would never clarify him his career as a bust.
Yeah, I look, Paul. As you know, did he meet all the expectations? No, but Ryan, he won a national championship and he won races. You know, he made it. He won the lottery in our sport.
Yeah, I mean, did James Stewart meet expectations?
You could say not.
debatable.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
That doesn't make him a bust.
Yeah.
By any means. Yeah. To your point.
Yeah.
Multi-race winner, won a national championship. People will forever tell stories about Adam. All good, positive, memorable mm-hmm. stories. So that's not a bust.
No. And I think of the times he's come up and co-hosted the Pulp Show with me and interacted with fans and on social media stuff. I told him at the live show, we did a live show in St. Louis and Adam asked to be on. I think we all knew what was coming, and he said, "When's your next live show?" And I told him, he's like, "I'm in." You know, he wanted to do it, which was cool. And I told him at the live show, I'm like, you made me laugh so hard so many times at your social media posts or your interviews. And one of them was when he did the I got the race wrong at the live show, but now I know it. When he did the Charlotte USGP on a 250, he endoed, or he flew off the bike in the first turn. And he had
red, right at the start.
Right. And he had red, white, and blue gear on, and he posted America. And he was like just eating shit. And it just made me laugh so hard that this guy could post a photo of him flying through the air in red, white, and blue gear and say America, America, and that was it. Like, the guy just got it. He got it from a public relations aspect, from a fan aspect, all the stuff you said, Ryan. He just got it, you know?
Yeah, he's been that way since he was a little kid. Like, that's naturally him. That is who he is, and that's awesome.
Yeah, no, for sure. Before we let you go on the Renthal Reaction podcast, Adam Cincirillo hanging it up. I put you guys a little bit on the spot here. Give me some personal interactions with Adam that maybe stand out over the years, and while you're thinking of that, I can start.
Oh,
one of mine that I remember was a conversation with him on the phone after Geneva, and I don't know which shoulder injury it was, but he went under the knife again, and he was like, "Dude, I let Cowie down, I let Mitch down." He's like, "I can't believe this is happening again," and I'm like, "Yeah, man, like you'll get it, like, you know, you'll be fine." And he's talking to me, and you know, we're getting deep or whatever, and he just goes, "I will overcome this, you know." And I said, "Yeah, like I know." He goes, "This isn't going to stop me," and I go, "I know, man, I know, like you're fine." And he goes, "I will win races." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, I'm on your side." But the point is he was just already determined to come back. And this is maybe, you know, 4 days after he had done it or whatever. And just, he was young, right? I don't know what year this was. I don't know how old he was. And I was just, I was blown away by this kid telling me, you know, he will be back and he will win. And he did. And the determination and all that was just, it was a neat little thing. Ryan, what about you? Anything stand out for you?
Again, I think just that self-belief. His dad was very hard on him.
Mm-hmm.
And later on in his professional career, I would say post-250, you know, he wasn't as involved in the racing so much. So, like, I had a lot of experience in dealing with his dad and just – the way a young kid was able to navigate having a father that was hard on him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like he really, I want to say he almost wasn't fazed by it. Like, for a young kid to mentally process having a father that pushed him. And, you know, then I could have a conversation with him on the side and he'd be like, "Ah, he's just being an idiot. You know, he's being an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about." Like,
yeah.
I got it. You know, at 12.
At 12, and, yeah, and yeah, like, exactly, right.
He was so good at balancing that. You know, like, he was so respectful in the sense of, like, "I'm listening to my dad. I'm taking in what he's telling me. Like, I respect his opinion. He's trying to help me."
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's being an asshole right now, but, like, I'm taking all this in. And then him and I would talk separately, and he'd be like, "All right, what do you think?" And then I could be like, "Yeah, like, maybe he's a little bit out to lunch here, but, like, he's not wrong when he's talking about this." So, like,
yeah,
it was kind of always trying to blend that. But for, like, a young kid to not just get defeated and deflated and you know, sometimes you see kids end up in tears because of dad's hard
mm-hmm.
on them.
Oh, yeah.
Then they get so frustrated, but he was just able to handle things so maturely for his age, always.
Paul?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have a specific story speaking directly with him, but I was going to speak to a point that I was when I was most impressed with Adam at a young age. And it's in the same vein that Ryan just spoke of, you know, because, you know, for better or for worse, you know, his dad was a very hard on him. And you could see that being at the races in Florida growing up. You could see he was very hard on him. But it was different than maybe how you see other dads being hard on kids and how they accept it. Like, to me, I think Adam accepted his dad being hard on him and embraced it. Like, he wanted to be pushed that hard because he knew what his capabilities were. And I think he believed that his dad knew what his abilities were and his capabilities. And this is coming from a guy that didn't ride a race either. Like, Alan didn't ride a race, but he was a student of the sport, just like Adam was. And I found that very unique that at such a young age that this young kid was fine absorbing the yelling and the very, you know, the hard, harsh criticism that I think Alan gave him a lot growing up, and it didn't faze him, to Ryan's point. So I think that was one of the most impressive things that you could see that, you know, because oftentimes when you see that kind of relationship, it's the dad who really, it's the dad's dreams, the dad's goals, but that's absolutely not the case with Adam. Like, he wanted to be a professional racer. He wanted to be as best he could on his motorcycle. So I thought that was just a huge telltale that would, that obviously served him many years down the road, given what he's accomplished and done in this sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And you think about at his peak 450 wise, you know, he got second to Zach Osborne outdoors. He's gone 1-1 at 450 Nationals. He, like I said, he was fast as shit so many times in Supercross. Never quite got it done, but stood on the box, you know. Could he have been a Supercross champion? Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
How many titles at Loretta's, Ryan? 11, maybe?
I mean, 11.
That needs to be spoke about. That is a gargantuan number at that race to achieve. So he's been successful the whole way.
Yeah. No, absolutely. All right. Anything else? Talk about AC hanging it up. I mean, whatever he does next, like we talked about, he's going to be so successful, right? He'll probably jump in TV, race day live stuff. You know, I mean, he's got plans. He's got his own podcast, you know?
And you can already see him dabbling in all that, right? Like, doing your live show, being race day live, you could see it over the last few months that he's wanting to get more active in that side of it. So, yeah, I can't wait to see what's next for him.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And also, this also is a sign that we're getting old, guys, because, you know, these riders are coming in and then they're leaving and we're still here. So
when are we going to, we're going to be talking about Evan's retirement speech next.
No, we're not.
Steve.
I will be done. I will not be doing that.
Okay.
But, awesome. Ryan, anything else to add?
No, I was at combo, like a story in that fastest qualifier year. I did think of something. So I guess, well, that was 2020, his rookie 450 year.
Mm-hmm.
And at Anaheim A1, I remember, for whatever reason, I was back at the race team truck, like before anybody else got back there after practice. And Adam came back, like was the first guy back there for some reason, and just like walked in the truck. And I happened to be standing in the truck by myself. I saw the times and he was fastest, and it might've been by like a significant amount. And, he goes, "How'd I do?" I go, "You were, what do you mean? How'd you do?" He's like, "I don't know. How'd I do?" I was like, "You were fastest." He goes, "Really?" He goes, "Huh. I felt like shit."
"Really?"
I'm like, "Oh, you're fast." He goes, "Sweet." And then he like tweeted something right away about it. But that was Adam. That's what he would do.
When he was the fastest guy there, seven straight practices or whatever, the guy that dethroned him, do you know who dethroned
Marty?
Him? Marty.
Marty.
And when the checkers went, I sent him a text and said, "Marty did it. Marty took you down. And all hail Marty," or something. I made a joke. He writes me back within like 30 seconds. He must have just got his helmet off and goes, "If there's anybody that I would want to top me, it would be Marty." he was very happy that Marty beat him, you know. So it was funny to have that interaction. Awesome. Well, I mean, I would say, you know, we're going to miss him or anything, but the guy's still going to be around the races, so whatever. He's got more time to co-host Public Mech Show, maybe.
There you go.
Renthal Reaction, renthal.com. Paul, everything good at Renthal? I don't think I asked you that off the top of the show. But
yeah, everything's okay. Good. Everything's busy, man. It's a tougher landscape out there than it was a while ago, that's for sure. So, but yeah, I mean, we got some exciting things coming. You'll probably see already next week, a new color will be back around, mm-hmm. which I think you'll be excited
you,
for.
You already dropped that news on the show.
Yeah, well, and I don't want to drop the other news yet because that other one is getting pushed back a little bit more. Purple Handlebars will be out there and available here next week. Distributors should start getting products, so that's exciting.
Yeah, purple bars. Cool. Awesome. Renthal Reaction, renthal.com. And Adam Cincirillo hanging it up at the end of Salt Lake. So we're going to miss him, but I'm sure he'll be around. Great career. One national championship wins everywhere. We're going to miss you, AC. Ryan Holiday and Paul Perabinos. Thanks, boys.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you.